Hey guys, welcome back to That Canadian Podcast. I'm your host and that Canadian, Sam. Today is Freaky Friday, which means we're talking about something freaky. And this something freaky just so happens to be the Berkshire UFOs back in 1969. I think by now, almost all of us are aware of Netflix's reboot of Unsolved Mysteries. The episode in this series reboot is particularly interesting because of the newly released and confirmed existence of UFOs. I believe it was on April 27th that the Pentagon formally released three videos that were previously leaked in 2017 of unidentified aerial phenomena encountered by US Navy pilots. This episode follows the story of four people and their families or friends. The following stories are just a few of the many UFO sightings among the many that span across the decades worldwide. The episode opened with a caption saying,
"On the evening of September 1st, 1969, an unexplained phenomenon occurred in Berkshire, Massachusetts."
After this ominous opening credit, we're told the story that begins with Jane Green on that very night of September 1st, 1969. Jane had two sons who were playing outside when all of a sudden they looked up into the sky and saw it. They immediately ran into the house and told their grandmother, who was babysitting them at the time. She didn't believe the boys and instructed them not to tell their mother because she didn't want them to upset her. Without knowing what her boys have seen, she also had an experience of her own. She too didn't want to upset the boys, so she decided not to tell them what she had experienced. Once Netflix called her and told her that they are doing a documentary, she decided to tell her son what had happened, and he said that he saw it too. Jane explained that her family owned the oldest Rexall in the Northeast, making them a more well-known family in the community. Jane explained that, in a small town, if someone changed their diet from a donut to a roast beef sandwich, everyone knows about it. So she tried very hard to keep her encounter a secret. Her experience began after the sun had set. She and her best friend, who had since passed away, named Mary DuGrace, were driving from Stockbridge to Great Barrington. As they were driving, they could see a lot of bright lights up ahead and were convinced that there had been an accident of some kind and that the lights were from emergency responder vehicles. The lights quickly became too bright for her to drive safely, so she pulled over to the side of the road, and that's when she noticed another car had done the same. When they got out of the car to see what was going on, she looked up and saw a massive floating object in the sky above them. It was so large, she couldn't see the end of it in any direction. When describing the object, she said that she wasn't sure if it was silver or gold, but she could tell that it was very tall and had no windows. It made no noise as if there was no motor. If it weren't for the lights, they wouldn't have even noticed that it was there. Within a few seconds, the craft made a couple of sharp and rigid movements and then quickly vanished over and behind a mountain. Seeing this object would have been eerie enough because of its unexplained presence and size, but seeing it move that quickly so far away would have been something else to see altogether. Now, I'm open to the idea of aliens and everything that comes along with that, but if I didn't and I saw this firsthand, I would quickly become a believer. And this is exactly what happened to Jane. She didn't believe in anything related to extraterrestrial phenomena until September 1st, 1969. She told her husband what happened, and he suggested that she call the local radio station to report it. I imagine that telling someone you didn't know would have been a very scary thing, but she did it. However, the host laughed it off and basically said that she was either drunk or full of it. However, after a few hours had passed, the station was flooded with phone calls about what had happened. The host eventually decided to call the police station to see what was happening and if they had gotten any calls as well. It was at this point during the episode when Chief William Walsh went through the public records for that day. There wasn't a lot to be recorded or mentioned. The gist of what happened that day is that there is a man who reported trash and beer cans had been thrown around his property. Chief Walsh also mentioned that during the evening shift around midnight, a lady from the day shift turned up and was found. I don't really understand what he was trying to say there. Maybe the woman had been reported missing, but turned up sometime later? I'm not sure. He worded it in a really weird way. Anyway, back to Jane. When she learned that others had also seen something, she felt much better. I'm assuming her friend Mary also witnessed the floating craft, but I think she means people other than the two of them. She also talked about how she now understood the frustration of others who had reported sightings when they were laughed at and not believed. This episode must have been filmed after April 27th of this year. I say this because in the episode, she mentions how even people in the military have seen UFOs, and that she hopes that because they are respected, that more people would believe stories such as hers. Jane made an excellent point and said that she really wishes that people would open their minds, because people who are being interviewed are people just like everyone else out there. At one point or another, they probably didn't believe and probably even doubted. And then something like this happens and there's no longer any doubt. This is the story of Tom Warner's experience. Tom said that even though this happened 50 years ago, it feels like it was just yesterday. He explained that the night that it happened, he was coloring with the girl next door, Debbie. She was 4 years older than him, and she would always tell him to color within the lines. Later in the evening, when he was done coloring, he went to the window to look outside. Then, all of a sudden, he heard a voice in his head, and it told him that he needed to go home as fast as he could. Understandably, it scared him. He told Debbie about the voice, and he thought that it was God talking to him through the clouds. Whoever it was, he knew he had to get home, and fast. He ran as fast as he could out the front door and into the field, so fast that it felt like he was flying. Debbie's sister, Jane Shaw, who I'll be calling Jane S., said that he had been running in place for roughly 5 minutes instead of running away. She said, and I quote, "He was running, but not moving." At this point, Tom felt like something was wrong and he got the chills. Then he turned to his left and saw a massive UFO come flying out of nowhere, and it beamed a light down on him. As soon as the light beamed down on him, his arms went flying back, and he claimed that it felt like the wind was being sucked right out of him. Jane S. said that the light went around him and towards the left, and then, all of a sudden, he was gone. Everyone was frantically looking for him, but no one could find him. Tom remembered a few things during the time that he was taken, but we'll talk about that a little later. The next thing he knew, he was laying down on the other end of the property. When he looked up, he could see the beam of light shining down on him. His brother saw it too, and told Tom to run, but he couldn't move. He heard a voice say,
"I'll be down in a minute."
And after a minute passed, the beam was gone, and he could move again. Jane S. said that the total time he was missing was about 7 minutes. Tom explained that at first, it was the kind of story he would want to tell at a campfire. But as soon as he told it, he'd regret it. People began to judge him because they couldn't believe that something like that could ever happen. One of the chilling things that Tom said during his interview was,
"All you have to do is go out there, look at the sky, and sooner or later, you'll see something and not know what it was."
Tom was born and raised in a different city, but he and his family moved to the area for a fresh start. Tom's mom, Nancy Reed, was a single mom and owned a local business in town. He was just under 10 years old when he had his encounter, and when his life changed forever. On the day of September 1st, 1969, Tom was riding a horse in a parade in town. After the parade, Tom, his younger brother, his mom, and grandma went to the diner for dinner. At around 9 p.m., Nancy wanted to get home because it was almost the boys' bedtime, so she took the shortcut home across the covered bridge called Sheffield Bridge. Tom and his younger brother, Matthew, were sitting in the back seat. Tom was playing with fireballs and gave one to his brother when his grandmother turned around and told him that Matthew could choke and to not give it to him. While Tom's grandma was turned, she noticed a light that looked like it was rising from the edges of the river. Tom explained that as the light rose up, it shot out rods of light. While everyone was focusing on the strange light, his brother Matthew looked to the right and saw an orange orb that had a roll like an ocean wave was trapped inside of it. As they were driving along, everything was completely silent. There was no bugs, no noise whatsoever. He said it felt like they were underwater, feeling like the pressure had changed. Nancy pulled the car over, and all of the windows were open because of how hot it was that day. That's when they saw a hovering disc, describing that it looked like a sideways turtle shell with a weird ridge down the middle of it. They claim it had to have been at least 100 yards long. Suddenly, the car lit up like it was surrounded by floodlights. It was so bright. It was as if it was daytime. All of a sudden, sound returned, and there was really loud chirping. And that's the last thing Tom remembers about being in the car. Tom explains that he can only remember about 15 minutes of the ordeal, but in all reality, it lasted about 3 hours. Nancy has no memory of the lost time. The only thing she remembers is coming to in front of Silk's Variety, which is about a mile and a half-ish away from where they originally were. In addition to that, one thing she thought was odd was the fact that when she came to, her mom was in the driver's seat and she was in the passenger seat. It didn't make sense because her mom never drove, and she knew without a shadow of a doubt that she had been the one that was driving home just hours before. Both Nancy and Tom think that they weren't supposed to know what happened. They believe that who, or whatever, took them tried to make it look like everything was normal and pass it off as them having blacked out. But two mistakes were made. Nancy and her mother were in the wrong seats. And they were almost 2 miles away from where they were before all of this happened. Tom explained that people in many surrounding areas reported having experiences similar to the ones he went through. Towns like Pittsfield, Lennox, Stockbridge, Great Barrington, Sheffield, North Cann, and more. How can so many strangers from so many towns have similar experiences without it being true? Tom has always been open about his experiences and feels that he needs to continue to talk about it to get it off his chest. He believes that they were singled out and ridiculed because they were from out of town and were so open about sharing their experiences. Men were saying disgusting and vulgar things to his mother, and people would even follow her home. There was one time when a pickup truck followed her all the way home and even followed her up her driveway. Nancy said that she decided to take the kids and move out of town because she was being followed and the kids were being bullied. People doubted her family's claims, but she said,
"Truth is truth, and truth will come out every time."
Tom concluded his versions of the events by simply saying,
"My word is my bond, and I don't break it for anybody. I wear who I am on my sleeve. If you've got something to say, say it. I don't care what you feel or think. I was there. I was there."
The last person who shared their story is Melanie Kirchforger. Kirchforger? Melanie Kirchforger. Sorry. She lived in the county since 1957 and was about 12 years old the night of the visitation. Melanie told the story of how she and her sister were friends with someone who stole cigarettes from her parents, and they all planned on sharing them together that weekend. Her parents, however, had different plans. They planned on going on a road trip and getting some ice cream. Melanie's family went to Dairy Queen, got their ice cream, and parked at Lake Mansfield, where her dad backed into their parking spot. While eating their ice cream, she said a bright aura came shining down around them. Her dad excitedly said, "Holy shit!" Melanie and the rest of her family were freaking out because they had no idea what was going on. Her mom tried to calm them down by saying that it was just a shooting star, but they knew it wasn't just a shooting star. Her father wanted to chase the light, and despite their desperate pleas, he decided to go after it anyway. She doesn't remember much after this, but what she did remember was being on a ship. While on this ship, she saw Tom Warner. Tom even remembered seeing Melanie, saying that she was laid out on a table, and he will never forget the fear he saw in her eyes. Melanie was in a room with other children, and they were disappearing one by one. When she woke up, she was at the lake. By herself. She had to walk home. Before this experience, Melanie did not know Tom. They were always a part of different crowds and they never had the opportunity to meet. That being said, when she did meet him after the events that took place, she felt an instant connection with him, like he was her brother. She can't blame anyone for not believing her story, and if someone had to go through it to believe her, she wouldn't wish it on anyone. If 2020 has taught us anything, it's that anything can happen. Whether it's murder hornets, a new virus that causes a worldwide pandemic and shutdown, or Ebola making a comeback, anything can happen. Even the Pentagon released footage confirming that there was a UFO in 3 different videos. So why can't these stories be true too? All right, that wraps it up for today's episode. Make sure you listen in on Monday for the Movie Monday spoiler-filled review of the movie Eli from Netflix. If you want to check out our spoiler-free review, you can check us out on the Andrew and Sam Movie Review Show or the ASMR Show on YouTube. Since we're a small channel, you'll probably have to look up the ASMR Show and Eli, just because you need to find us somehow. Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. This has been That Canadian Podcast. I am That Canadian. Keep your eyes to the sky and stay safe out there.